This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Oh, Jeff, welcome back to another after show. This week, we will be discussing many things fitness and health related. Actually, you know what? We will get to the review of the week, but we had some really nice reviews this week. It's very special. This is the way that I would say this is like the number one, one of the closest ways that you guys get to interact with the podcast, with the reviews. Obviously, it's not a two-way communication, but very much appreciate the kind words that you guys said. And the people have spoken. There are some great reviews. It was hard to pick this week. Like this week, genuinely, some fantastic reviews. I almost feel like giving everyone a program, but if it works like that, then we'll be giving away all our stuff for free. So, a few things happened last week. We were very busy. The big announcement that we keep alluding to, I think we're going to set the date for that, the first week in March, which is kind of the tail end of Feb. But yeah, it'll be kind of the first week in March. Because on the weekend, obviously, we're away. We're in Newport, which is like a northern beach in Sydney. And we've pretty much decided on how we want things to kind of move forward. And we will be announcing everything very, very soon. Very soon.
We're hiding from the rain. I was just thinking with the reviews, though. Rain. No one has got a review yet as good as the guy that called us an avatar and a child. So, you guys maybe need to pick up just your comedy game in your reviews.
No, I thought the comedy game was pretty good. So, for those of you who aren't in Sydney, or maybe missed it on the news. So, obviously, we had like the worst fires in the history of humankind. But then, the earth is like readjusting. And so, we've had like torrential rain downpour. The positive side, besides the absolute chaos. Did you hear about the tree on the taxi?
No.
Dude. This tree in the city fell out of like huge tree, like
yeah,
massive tree, collapsed onto the road, landed on a taxi, full house in the taxi, 4 people in hospital.
Oh, God.
Can you believe that?
It's nuts. When I was driving down, there's like the huge trees over top. I was just like,
yeah,
I've got to speed.
It was like torrential flooding, but our dam. So Sydney's in like a pretty bad drought, like heavy water restrictions. Our dam levels were at 42% or something. Now they've gone above 63%. Wow. So over a 20% increase in like 48 hours. That's so funny. The best part was, so right near my apartment, there's kind of like these two massive buildings that kind of create this walkway to the train station. And I think just how it's laid out there, the wind kind of gets sucked into between those buildings. And like if you're ever walking down like a street in the city where the building's really high, it's like a wind tunnel.
Yep.
And so, a wind tunnel with rain is hilarious because people have umbrellas, right? And I stood because I was like, there's no way I'm walking down there. It's so slippery in that walkway because it's all paved, like smooth pavement. So, I was in thongs. I was like, there's no way I'm going to slip. So, I was waiting for it to calm down, which took, you know, like 30 minutes. But just watching people, because it's so calm either side of the walkway, but people just don't realize the second you step into that wind tunnel, it's like pure chaos. So,
when people's umbrellas turn into like a bucket for water to fill up in.
No,
dude, reverse shape.
No, they're gone. Forget about it. Completely
out of their hand.
No, like ripped and shredded. Like just, and the next day in the garden beds next to the walkways are just heaps of broken umbrellas. Mm. People just abandoned their umbrellas. They're completely gone. So that was quite entertaining. But no, we stayed safe. There were some serious water leaks in my apartment. I don't know about your apartment, but...
Well, my downstairs where the cars were was like underwater.
Yeah. It's nuts, eh? So, how long does it take to drain out when it's down there?
Sometimes it takes a while. This one was good. Like, overnight, next morning, it was just wet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. Besides that stuff, actually, I was on the... Fortunately, even if you don't own a Whoop band, I would suggest getting on their mailing list somehow because they put out really interesting data. You know, what's cool about data companies, because Whoop's essentially like a data company, right? Fitness tracker data company is... They can, you know, the more people that start wearing Whoop bands, the better the data gets for them on any topic that they're, or any data point that they're studying, right? Because rather than like, hey, this is what 100 people are showing us, it's like, here's what 100,000 people wearing Whoop have shown us. And the most recent article they sent me was on napping. I don't know if you saw it. So, obviously, napping is, we've had quite a few sleep experts on the podcast and napping comes up. And I don't know. I was kind of sitting on the fence as to whether naps were good or not, and how to, the best way to go about naps. I know some people are very pro naps, some people are very against naps. Kind of the factual points that I had, you know, decided were like, these are like universally true, is a nap should either be 20 minutes. So you shouldn't, because the stage, you go light sleep to deep sleep. So it goes light sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep. And you want to avoid waking up in REM sleep or deep sleep. So the 20-minute window is kind of perfect for light sleep. Wake up out of that and you like improve some memory retention stuff. I think it said, because I want to say, I think REM improves memory retention, but light sleep improves your like skill retention or skill development. So if you're like trying to learn a new skill, or it might be the other way around, but they're separate. So like, I think if you take a light nap, yeah, there were some skills that you were working on, or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's like you have some memory retention stuff, but if you enter REM sleep, then that's where you improve your skill learning. So if you're like, I don't know, learning a piano, for example, once you go through a cycle of REM sleep, that's when it's going to improve your ability to get better at the piano. Whereas if you just did light sleep only, for example, you wouldn't necessarily get better at the piano, but you might, you know, remember that person's name better, or you might remember the groceries, you know, rather than forgetting, all that sort of stuff. So that was really interesting. The other things that we knew were factually true was, yeah, the 90 minutes or full sleep cycle.
So they're looking at people that took naps.
They were collecting the best nap data from everyone using Whoop and use like comparing it to studies and stuff that they have. Like, they're really comprehensive articles. They're really good. And what else were they coming out? And then they were kind of studying stuff with people that woke up in between those times. So people that did 45-minute naps and hour naps and that and some of that data as well, and sort of the recovery data on the other side of it. And the only hesitation I had had against naps was regular naps was, do you remember when we had Alison Breger on the podcast? Yes. She actually said, I think it was her, she said she was against naps regularly because if you got used to them, it would diminish the effectiveness of them. Or she was saying, like, if your body came to expect them too much, they wouldn't be as effective, or they'd constantly be putting you asleep, and it would be a dip in your metabolism. And she was saying that was a negative thing. She was saying that it would slow your metabolism down, and that potentially could have some negative health side effects down the track, like constantly having your metabolism drop dramatically in the middle of the day. So I did kind of go against naps for a little bit, but based off what Whoop's data says, it seems like only it's probably best to take a nap when you need it around midday to 3 p.m. just because that is the time where your core body temperature drops. So if you are going to take a nap, that's like kind of your ideal window. Obviously that's hard for a lot of people that work 9 to 5. And then if you are, you're either going to choose 20 minutes or 90 minutes. Those are your two sweet spots, and anything in between is really bad. Like you're actually worse. You're better off not taking a nap because you're worse on the other side. And of course, everyone's experienced this, right? I like went to sleep for 20 minutes, ended up doing an hour, panicked, tried to get up, and ended up feeling worse for most of the day. And yeah, napping past sort of 3, 4 p.m. is not good for your nighttime sleep. So
that's one of the biggest mistakes.
I think the nap data is pretty conclusive now. And then I would also say, yeah, try not to make it necessarily a regular thing unless you're probably like a pro athlete. But yeah, I think regular napping might not be as effective as napping when you need it.
The problem with napping is that the constraints are so strict. Like you said, right? If you go like less than an hour and a half, you come out feeling so bad. If you go over the 20, you're bad. And what tends to happen, I find, is that when you do it, it's just so often you mess it up.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's like 20 minutes, but if you're really tired, you fall asleep really quickly. 20 minutes can be too long. You know what I mean? Or sometimes you go for an hour and a half, but it takes you a while to fall asleep, and then it still ends up being like 45, 50 minutes, and you messed it up. So it's like, I find them playing with fire.
I think the best time to take a nap personally is when you're like, not extreme tiredness, because that's when you sleep through a 20-minute alarm clock and you keep snoozing it. But it's when you're like, oh man, I'm feeling pretty groggy. I really could use just a quick nap, and you lie down and you sleep within 2 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and you like feel perfect. So
in like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's not like that extreme tiredness. Like you got 2 or 3 hours sleep the night before. I think it's better to just push through that and then go to bed super early, like 7 p.m. and then just sleep for like 11, 12 hours instead. That's a nap strategy right there.
Well, probably in April, I'll get accustomed to it.
Yeah. So worth getting on the Whoop mailing list so you don't miss articles like that. Oh, it's just going to be on their blog or something. Really good. Useful stuff. Okay, so last week I was in Was in the north again with Ben Pekulski. He was here doing his seminars, and I released a bonus episode with him, which I've now pulled off.
And what would you call him? He's an IFBB pro?
Yeah, so he's an ex IFBB pro. He didn't win Mr. Olympia, but he was top 10.
Contestant.
Yeah, top 10 at the Olympia is like, you're basically one of the best bodybuilders in the world. And I think he came second at the Arnold Classic once, which is also quite prestigious and quite difficult as well. It's basically one of the best bodybuilders ever. And now he's like more of a businessman. He's like using his knowledge over the years to help.
For good.
Yeah. What do you mean?
For the power of good.
Yeah, for the power of good. For the power of building muscle. So he's got like a podcast. He's got like a business where he does seminars. Yeah. He's got training programs, you know, all the kind of stuff you'd expect. And, you know, I interviewed him. It was a great interview. And we released it for just a week. We'll pull it off. We'll re-release it properly later. But I went to his camp. He invited me to his camp when he was out here for a day. So I went out there for a day with one of my coaches, and there was a lot of interesting stuff in there. But basically the best thing that I came away with was they were talking about concentric tempo training, and they were drawing like this curve on kind of like a volume curve through a rep. So I think the example they used was like a leg extension, right? And so most people in the gym, like 95% of people, when they do a concentric movement, they do it as fast as they can, right? Yes. They're trying to push the weight. They're trying to pull something towards them as fast as possible. What they were saying is, because usually like the start of movements, you can generate a lot of force, like the start of a lat pull down or like the start of a bench press or whatever, and you drive it off. What ends up happening is you create a lot of momentum. And then during that time, the weight is suspended through the momentum, and the amount of tension in the muscle is a lot lower. So let's just think about it for like a bench press, right?
Yeah, of course.
The bench is starting at the bottom. I kind of bounce it off my chest like most people do, and I'm driving it up as hard as I can to get it off my chest. Through that next 80% of the movement, there is a lot of momentum as I'm driving it off. And because most people are doing the 8 to 10 rep range, it's not a max weight. The loading and tension through the muscle during that concentric phase of the movement is actually quite low. And it makes sense because not only like then most people kind of struggle with the lockout when they catch tension again, and that's when the full force of the weight is back on the muscle. And so what they're saying is a lot of these volume studies are hard to kind of work off because they're like, it's not, people are using a lot of momentum during the movement, and that's if their form's really strict. Now imagine a guy doing a bicep curl and he's kind of swinging his hips into it, or they're doing a row and they're kind of lifting their back. A lot of people are using a heap of momentum to get it to their end ranges, and therefore the tension on the muscle through the whole curve of the movement, it varies. If it should be 40 kilos every, say it's a 5 second concentric, at each second you want it to be 40 kilos, 40 kilos, 40 kilos, 40 kilos. If someone's driving it as hard off they can off their chest, it might be 40, 30, 20, 0, 40 at the end, right, in a bench press. So that was probably the biggest takeaway I got from it, is that, remember, we used to do slow concentric training as well. It was like 3-0, 3-0.
Yeah.
So 3 seconds down, 3 seconds up, just constant tension for 6 seconds for, say, 10 reps. But we used to do it because we were trying to condition the endurance of the muscle, right? We're trying to attack a different kind of the mitochondria in the muscle. But science aside, we're essentially just trying to get the muscle fitter and more enduring. But what was interesting is he was like, it's actually better for hypertrophy because you don't have to lift as heavy. You just do a slow concentric and you're getting more volume and tension through the muscle through the whole lift.
It's just hard. That's why people often don't do it. It's such hard training.
Yeah. So I did it yesterday in the gym, right? Because I was experimenting with it, and I did it on 3 back movements. Actually, I did it on the day of the seminar as well. Afterwards, we went down and we trained, and my concentric isn't crazy normally anyway. Like I used to like to keep a lot of tension on the muscle, but man, I reckon the soreness I've been for a while, and it's probably like 25% lighter than I normally am, and it definitely burns way more. Like if you're doing 10 reps, from like you hit rep 6 and you want to stop. Whereas like not really, like if you're doing fast concentrics, you don't really want to stop till like the last 1 to 2 reps, but very interesting style training.
Yeah, it's similar to like how bands work. You know, bands make it harder. They cut down that momentum
because they keep the tension
through the lift, and that's why you get so sore from them.
Mm.
So I guess the ultimate combination would be bands and controlling
and slow concentric.
But that, it is going. It's funny because you see beginner lifters, you always know because they go so fast on the eccentric and then so slow on the concentric.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you see advanced lifters, it's usually the reverse, right? They really control the eccentric and they're very powerful.
Yeah.
On the concentric, but I guess for muscle building, sometimes you want to taper that.
Yeah.
Even when you are a more advanced lifter and like do times where you do control the concentric. And I think it's just, you know, everyone probably gets a bit lazy and you skip that sort of training.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily... I don't think it's necessary for people to build muscle because you can do it without it, clearly. But I think it's just a good reminder of the importance of form and muscle tension. And it's just an advanced technique for people that maybe don't want to keep pushing the weight up. They want sort of a deload week, but
coming
they want to keep their volume up. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's just good to practice it on different machines and apparatuses to see how much momentum you are using. Because I do think in some machines and movements, you do use way more momentum than others. Like, I don't think you use heaps of momentum on a bench press unless you bounce it. Like, there is pretty good tension the whole way. And sort of with squatting as well, there's like good tension through the whole movement, these compound lifts. But like you watch someone do like a leg extension or like a seated cable row, there is so much momentum. They basically have no tension in the concentric. They don't have much tension at all. They swing their back. They're at an angle when they're pulling it towards them. The weight basically catches in a row like on their stomach and they let it go straight back. Like there's so much shit form on a lot of machines and cables.
Probably say like pull-ups, you generally see that as well, because you can get a lot of power out of the first pull.
Yeah.
Out of the bottom.
Yeah. There's some people they're just wasting their time, honestly. They could just be doing a way better job. They don't have to have a 6-second concentric.
Yeah.
They just need to like actually control the movement. I see some guys do lat pull-downs and cable rows. I feel like just going up to them, holding their back in place when they're doing it, and I go, okay, now pull the weight. I don't think they could do one rep. It's basically just a fucking back extension, you know? And then, anyway, that's why we do this podcast, to help these people. Okay, so I actually wanted to talk about, it came up on, firstly, it came up on the Tim Ferriss podcast, which I don't know why I've gone back into it a little bit. He's had some good guests on, so I was curious to hear him interview them. But the point I'm bringing up is he ran an ad for a company I hadn't heard before. So the company was Brave. Now, obviously, I think in this era, the data privacy debate is getting quite hectic. People are really concerned about how Google is sharing their data. You read that book. What was that book called again?
Zucked.
Yeah. What are they doing with our data? What's some of the crazy shit they're
doing? Pretty much everything negative you could imagine. But
because most people think, oh yeah, I'm just getting served ads that I like. But what are some of the other conspiracies?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, like one of the big ones in that is like, you know, every single time they're always like, oh, log in to this with Facebook. You're like, oh, it's like convenient.
Right.
I'll just log in with Facebook. It saves me like making a new password. But they set that whole thing up really so they can just know everything you're doing on the internet, even when you're not doing anything to do with Facebook. So like every app you download, they know all the apps you use. They know all the different like platforms you're on because you're always logging in with Facebook. But then on Google, they generally say is like probably the worst in terms of like utilizing your data. But that's everything. That is like everything from every single thing you do to do with their browser,
right?
Or their Google Maps. Like every single thing. Like it's not just the websites you go to, the searches you put in. It literally can even be like how fast you control the mouse,
right?
As you move it around the browser. Yeah, that can be helpful in selling ads.
Right.
Everywhere you go, you know, it's like anything, right? It's like, hey, you're planning a holiday. You know, they're going to be auctioning off the ads for which coffee shop you're going to go to when you search coffee in Google Maps when you get there.
Fuck. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, so, some of the stuff, negative stuff I've heard them do with the data is, and I don't know if this is true, but they start tracking your keystrokes, your keystroke average time, and that's like how quickly you're typing. And based off the data they have on your age and your socioeconomic status and where you live and stuff like that and the health reports, and your all the keystroke data and pacing that they have, they can pick early Alzheimer's and like early dementia and stuff like that and different diseases. And as a result, your insurance premiums go up.
Yeah.
Because they flag you in the system as someone who could have early onset dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. And then they sell that to the insurance companies. All the insurance companies have that data and they go, okay, yeah, your insurance premium is going to be this much more. I think that's like some of the early negative ones.
Yeah, it's out of this world. But also just sometimes I think it starts to get a little bit annoying. You're like, you search one thing and then you served ads on that thing forever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and also like you just want to know, like remember back in the day you'd search on Google and I'd call you up on our fucking home phones, on our landlines, and I'd be like, hey, it's the third link. You know, search this, it's the third link.
Yeah.
That's not a thing anymore.
Well, so, and even, you know, with Google, because they read your emails. So
they read your emails.
Yeah, so it's in the terms and conditions, but it's not like someone sitting there reading. Obviously, that would be the most boring job ever.
Yeah, it's the algorithm.
But yeah, like if you're emailing someone about a product or whatever, then obviously that's all in there and it comes up on the search terms. And that includes like all the Google Docs, Google Sheets that everyone kind of runs the business with.
Yeah, right. So the reason I bring this up is because Tim Ferriss ran an ad for a new browser which protects your data privacy. And so I downloaded it and started using it. It's really good. It's called Brave. How he sold it on the ad was like, they turn off cross-site tracking. So like, you're not going to be served like ads and they're not going to like run algorithms on you as much, because they're not collecting your data through the browser. But how he sold it was it's actually faster because they're not running all this background stuff. It's not faster like he made it sound on the ad, but it's definitely a little bit faster. But if you every time you open a new page, it tells you all the ads total that have been blocked and all the cross-site tracking that's been blocked. I've only used it for 24 hours. It's like over 300 ads and cross-site tracking links blocked already. Like, we are being tracked everywhere.
Mm.
Like everywhere. And I don't really use the internet, like Chrome or whatever, that much, like compared to some other people. Like, they're on all kinds of blogs and websites and YouTube and videos. Like, I don't use it that much. I mainly just do laptop for work, but... And then, it's good. And also, I heard Joe Rogan talk about a search engine called DuckDuckGo. And DuckDuckGo is originally how Google was set up. So it's no algorithm. It's just like the top searched stuff and like the best thing you want to find. So it takes you out of the echo chamber. Because you know, like once someone knows you're kind of like, say, anti-vegan or whatever, not saying that's me, but just an example, if you're anti-vegan, you're going to say, you might type in something and say, do vegans have micronutrient deficiencies?
Yep.
And you're going to get top searches that reinforce your beliefs, going, yes, they do. Yes, they're missing this. Yes, the research has shown this. And so, you're only being shown the data you want to get shown. You won't find an article that pops up that goes, actually, it's not true. It's false data or whatever, you know. So it's interesting. So, I'd recommend two things. Download Brave and use the search engine DuckDuckGo. And honestly, you forget that you're on them. Like, they look exactly the same as Chrome and Google. Like, people
on DuckDuckGo now. It is quite different. Like, it looks really similar, but if you type in the My Muscle Project on there and you type it in on Google, you do get different results.
You've got different results?
Yeah, like all different videos that I look at.
Yeah, right. Oh, there's a calorie challenge.
Different websites.
Yeah, see. So, if you care about your data privacy and you don't want, you know... The government checking all your shit, then I recommend that.
That is
really
amazing.
Recommend that. Yeah.
Yeah, it says here you can't even opt out of Google scanning your emails.
Fuck. It's crazy.
There's no opt out.
Obviously we still use Gmail and Google Suite, but yeah. We'll wait for something else to come out. So we're away on the weekend and we're talking a little bit about our nutrition and stuff, and you know, I was whinging to you about how it's really difficult.
Mm.
And I was like, fuck, you know, it's when we were younger and, you know, we did a nutrition coaching program or we wanted to train on nutrition, it was so easy. And I was thinking, why is it not easy anymore? And you were just saying, you know, we're fucking busy now. Mm. So much more busy, so much more on our plate. And so I kind of had a bit of a whinge to my nutrition coach on Sunday night. I was like, look, you wanted me to track. I tracked for a week. You said, you know, make these changes, hit these numbers. And I was like, you know, I got renovations at the studio, renovations at home, renovations at the gym. I'm like, I have no microwave, no office, like no routine. I'm in the car all the time. I'm not going to, I was even speaking to about it with Connie yesterday. I'm like, I can't, if I'm out and we've just had a meeting somewhere in a different place and we're both hungry and we want to go get food, I'm not going to go home to weigh out my food to eat a pre-prepared meal. Like, no, I'm just going to have an experience here, like, you know, on the beach and just have a nice meal and just enjoy it and just make a choice that's kind of aligned. And I was like, look, man, I really want to be the guy that's tracking right now and doing all the right things, but I'm like, it's just not working for me. So, like, I'm sorry, but tracking is completely off the cards right now. I have no routine. And he was like, look, that's fine. Our coach actually, he also coaches one of the founders of Noble.
Oh, cool.
And he was like, yeah, he's a really busy guy and stuff. But I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, that guy probably stays in the same office all day. He's like, yeah. I'm like, that's why he still works for him. I'm like, I can get my pre-prepared meals, but I can't carry around with them. They can't go with me everywhere because, first of all, I'm not always going to have a microwave at my location. And second, they're going to get warm. They're going to go off. And so, the habit that he really just... I was like, look, just give me... It's the same thing we give all our clients. I'm like, dude, just give me one thing to focus on right now. I just want one thing. I know that is the strategy that works for my clients. Quite honestly, I'm not a hero. I just need something that works for me right now. So, I told him that rather than putting on weight, that's like my secondary goal, but my priority right now is mental clarity and focus, and like not having dips in my energy or spikes in my energy throughout the day, so I can be productive. So my habit is only carbs pre-training, during training, and after training. And I was reading some, he was sending me some stuff to read about sort of the pre-training window. Actually, if you have your carbohydrate intake an hour before you train, it's actually too long. And then the blood glucose increase that you want for training that improves your training performance, actually then the curve swings down and you go hypoglycemic.
Yep.
And it's too long. So saying the window is like 45 minutes if you're just like kind of slow digesting, but if you can tolerate it 20 minutes before the session, they're more fast digesting. So that's my carb window now. And then outside of that, I'm just vegetables and fats. And then the only fats that I'm focusing on, he wants me to improve, is to have more omega-3s.
Yeah.
So I'm having some walnuts, and I'm having walnuts wasn't for the omega-3s, it was for something else. And then sardines.
Ah,
so I add those fats.
Very full.
Yeah.
Well, I did my omega-3 test. I haven't got my results back.
Oh, you haven't got it yet?
No. But hopefully we're doing well. I do eat a lot of salmon.
Yeah. I do too. But I heard to top up your omega-3s, you only need salmon once a week.
Yeah, you don't actually need to eat that much. Yeah. A bigger part of it is like not eating too much of the bad omega-6s.
Yes.
Like not just over, like if you just, you know, no matter how much salmon you eat, if you just eat like fried foods and shit, it doesn't make up for it.
What are the main bad sources of omega-6s? I know nuts have a lot of omega-6s in them.
Like most people get it from like fried foods. Fried stuff foods, like that. Yeah. Just absolutely chockers.
You know, interesting on the, like the elimination front as well. So Ev, she deals with like she's going to be upset for me speaking about this, but she deals with like skin condition, like cystic acne.
Mm.
It's not bad. It's not that bad. It sounds bad. It's not that bad, obviously, but any pimple on a female skin is like a fucking disaster, right? And but then I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how you use functional medicine for skin stuff, because we've tried like traditional like creams. Yep. And steroidal creams, and you know, then they wanted her to go on the pill and all this stuff. And we're like, look, this is not a good strategy. Like, surely there's a way you can fix this with food and whatever. And so, I was listening to this podcast and she was talking about how lots of women come in with this, like cystic acne as a condition. And it clears up really quickly by eliminating high histamine foods. And I went and she didn't name the high histamine foods. But one of the things she was saying is it's kind of like a threshold depending on your stress level. So on when you're really relaxed, you can tolerate a lot of high histamine foods if you have a bad reaction to them. But when you're in a really stressed way, then you can't tolerate as many high histamine foods. So that's why people be like, oh yeah, so I cut out the high histamine foods and then I reintroduce them and I was sweet. But then I ate the same amount, but on Friday when I was really stressed after work and I had a breakout. And so she was sort of saying it's like, there's a threshold and the daily threshold changes based off your stress levels. So if you're really stressed, like kind of avoid them at all costs. If you're not really stressed at all, you can probably tolerate them a bit more. But the highest foods like were the ones she eats every single day. And they're kind of funny because they're the foods that like not many people would really eat. So they wouldn't get breakouts. So it's like all pickled things. So she loves like jalapenos and like all these other like sauerkraut pickles and stuff like that. It's tomatoes. Loves tomato sauce, like loves tomato this, tomato that, and red wine. They were like the top three. She has it every day. I'm like, fuck. It's like your three favorite things that you add to all your meals. So, yeah, we've cut those out. And the other one was having some liver support as well. So, yeah, if you're listening to this and you have some of those, you have like a skin condition that you're kind of suffering from, it may be because of high histamine foods. And at least in the practice and research with this particular woman and her practice, yeah, she said she gets really good, like almost instant results with this sort of stuff.
Well, I went to a naturopath for a pretty similar thing, and I'm on some weird potion. I don't know what it is, but but one thing she did say was that the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio is a huge component of how your skin is.
Skin.
If you can improve your omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, which is like pretty easy, just get like a blood test, do a prick, and you get it found out. But if you can improve that, because they're saying like, you know, whatever, it's the 1-to-2 ratio is pretty ideal.
Yeah, isn't the perfect ratio 1-to-1?
I think to say 1-to-2 is 1-to-2. Good. And if you get like 1-to-1...
Omega-3s to omega-6s.
Yeah, omega-3 to omega-6. But people get up to like 1-to-20, 1-to-60.
Yeah, doesn't the average American diet, yeah, like 1-to-60?
It's like 1-to-60. Yeah, so it's obviously so far from the ideal.
Because it's from processed oils, right? Yeah. Like preservatives and foods and stuff like that, yeah.
So if you can get around to like 1-to-2, apparently that can like really, really help your skin. So if you're having any like not so good skin stuff, and that extends like, you know, obviously to underneath your hair as well, but everywhere. If you can improve that ratio, like get it tested. It's like really cheap to get it tested. And then if you can improve that ratio, which for a lot of people, it might be including omega-3, but it might also just be eliminating, you know, just really bad quality foods. Apparently it can make a huge difference to your skin.
Yeah. Look, this is honestly the wisdom of having a nutrition coach. I thought a nutrition coach, honestly, was just someone to hold you accountable to doing your macros. But then, like, when the macro stuff doesn't work, yeah, obviously, it's tried and tested, and it's, like, still the underlying principle behind all nutrition stuff. But, man, it's actually been really nice to have a coach who's just, like, helping me work through difficult strategies and unique scenarios. And he's just like, hey, like, yeah, we're going to focus on this, focus on that. So, I've gotten tons of value out of it so far. Yeah, it's the, obviously, the Working Against Gravity guys. We've mentioned them a few times. Look, we'll link all this stuff that we mentioned in the description of this episode. So, yeah, I think if, you know, if you're struggling with nutrition or you just have goals that are kind of maybe you think haven't really worked with macro counting before, it's not your thing, you can't stick to it. That's kind of the, you know, macro counting for me worked when I was a high-performance athlete, but it's not working for me now when my priorities are different. And so, I'm really enjoying the coaching from just a health perspective and just having someone suggest new foods to just add into the diet and not be like, oh, this has to work into your macros and this is just like, yeah, your goal is cognition. Let's try these like really good brain foods at the moment.
Yeah, for me personally, I've got good results already so far with the nutrition coaching, but I realized just tracking makes a huge difference for me.
Yeah.
I don't even like, I probably track 5-6 days a week. There used to be one day where I don't. But just tracking it, like it really does open your eyes. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I probably cut this out of my routine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
It just destroys it. And there's like so much like, oh, do I want to show my coach like this bag of chips? Like I'll just show him like a third of a bag. I'm not going to eat this whole thing.
Yeah.
So that any sort of tracking like that brings some accountability.
Yeah, for sure.
And awareness.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have some good after show questions. They've come all sorts of places, email and the social media. But we have Deanna Sassarossi.
Yeah.
5 S's in one name. That is a tough one.
Mm.
You guys briefly mentioned on a recent episode that your story involves being two former skinny guys who started working out, changed their bodies, found CrossFit, opened CrossFit gyms, and then turned on CrossFit. Can you please elaborate more on what you mean by quotation marks turned on CrossFit? Why did you? Is Creature no longer affiliated? What style of programming do you do for group classes in Creature? Do you think CrossFit is not right for Gen Pop? Thanks.
Mm, great question. So, a few things to unpack there. More kind of just on before we dive into the specifics of that question in relation to our stories, you know, CrossFit is one part of our story. You know, the earlier, you know, this is kind of where a lot of people joined us in on our journey is like when we were in CrossFit, and now we're kind of, I'd say, kind of out of it now. But you know, if you joined me when I first started, you know, into fitness, it was bodybuilding, and for you, Raf, it was like powerlifting stuff, right? And you know, if you had asked me, you know, what is the best training style, I would have said, you know, it's all bodybuilding, it's all 3x10, it's all this, all that. But it's just a part of a story. And I think that in order to have the most balanced and best approach to any task in your life, in this particular context, fitness, you want as many tools as possible at your disposal. You want to be able to know how to rehab your body with all kinds of exercise rehab stuff. So, you know, getting serious injuries and having serious injuries gives you a lot of tools because you try a lot of recovery techniques, you try a lot of rehab tools that you can use for in the future and with your clients. If you, you know, really want to get super strong and you put powerlifting as a focus, you end up accumulating a lot of knowledge when it comes to powerlifting technique. And like when I did that bench press cycle and I benched 140, I learned so much about bench press technique, right? And that is so useful going into like having that as a tool in the future. I'm like, I could never bench again, but at least if someone wanted to bench and they wanted my help, I would have so many more tools at my disposal than if I'd only ever been a gymnastics guy, right? And then obviously CrossFit is really good because in that, you know, what was it? Probably
6 years.
6-7 year stretch at least when we're really competing. CrossFit gives you a massive exposure to so many different domains, which is why it is so good for at least the athlete side of things and the coach side of things, because yeah, you learn rings, you learn pull-up bars, you learn handstand stuff, you learn powerlifting, you learn Olympic weightlifting, so you learn conditioning, you learn energy systems, so you do learn tons of stuff in CrossFit, especially if you are an athlete, because you dive so deep, you do so much, you know, you spend a whole 90-minute session in the morning just doing snatching, you know, like all the snatch stuff, and then you spend a whole 90-minute session doing all the gymnastics holds and stuff like that, right? So you just learn heaps of stuff, and obviously learn like how to train a lot and the resiliency. This is speaking from the athlete side. So that, like, all that learning, all that practice from all those years, practicing ourselves, helping clients with it, obviously competing in CrossFit as well, like, that has helped us tremendously in our story. But we're at a different stage in our story now, and I don't think it's like we've turned on CrossFit, but we've just stepped out of it. And it's always when you're in it, you think it's the shit, right? Whatever I'm into now, I always think it's the best. But then it's only when you come out of it that you go, oh, yeah, you know, this was really good about it, but this wasn't so good about it. Because you have that perspective when you're out of it. It's like when you're in a shit place in your life and you go and you take a travel, you travel and you go away and you're in a new environment. And maybe you're traveling around and you look back at your life back home and you think, oh, that's fucking stupid. Why am I hanging out with that person? Or why am I spending so much time at this place? Or fuck, why am I just not going to bed on time, you know? And so you come back refreshed with a new perspective and you just kind of cleanse everything that wasn't serving you and you keep what's good going forward. And that's basically what we've just done with our fitness journey. It's like, it's not so much turning on CrossFit as it is, okay, what was good and valuable and what wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just the reality of when you compete in something. Like, I had a rugby ball in my hands pretty much every day from like 13 to over 21. I've probably had it in my hands like 5 times in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah. Like, it's done.
Yeah.
And when you go really hard at it, then you don't want to be crap at it. So, yeah. I haven't played. I played for like probably 12 minutes in the last 10 years of rugby, and I used to play every single day. So that's how it is. And it kind of was similar with CrossFit. I was like competing really hard. And you like to give your body what it needs. And after a long stretch of competing in something, the last thing it needs is more of that. Mm. It's just not what your body is craving. It's craving balance after all that time. You know, I don't know, if you finish the NFL career, you're like, oh, I'm going to take up like something that hits my head really hard.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, I want something like yoga is going to like balance out my body.
Yeah.
And that's really what I think probably what both of us, or definitely for me, is what I'm after, like new challenges. I still always like things that are challenging. But I just know like that doing the same movement patterns is not what my body is after. Right. Like six, seven years of the same movement patterns.
Yeah.
You need some balancing of those movement patterns. And that's what I really, really want to do with my training now. And I think that's like any sport when you come out the other side.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, people, you'll get I don't always speak to it. Like, you get to hear these sort of thoughts, in a written basis. I would really, if you know, what I'm about to say kind of resonates, I would really recommend staying on top of my daily email, and the link to that you can subscribe in the description of this episode. But I wrote a couple of emails yesterday, and I was talking about perspective on this sort of stuff. And first, I just kind of brought it up because it was torrential downpour here. But we're saying the social norm is to look at rain as bad, right? Mm. It's like, fuck, it's raining, it's shit, we're getting wet. But because we've been in such a severe drought and we've had so many bad fires, everyone's like, oh, thank God the rain's here. Like, rain's awesome. It's like storming and flooding, but yeah, sick. The dams are getting topped up. And I was like, wow, it's just interesting how your perspective can shift how you view things quite quickly. So one of the things that I thought about was how my approach to exercise. And I think the reason we moved out of it is because our approach to exercise has, our perspective on exercise and what it's for has completely changed. And I use that at a more micro level. So I was describing it with my food choices and sort of the exercise choices. When you're trying to be a competitive athlete, or you're trying to like do something more extreme, like put on a lot of weight, be a bodybuilder, for example, you accept a lot more negatives because kind of what you're attaining is very intense and very hard. And you're not really coming from of the perspective of like, I want to nourish my body and be healthy and look after it long term. You're like, I need to win. And I have a date to win on this date, and I need to qualify for this thing, or I need to put on this muscle by this amount of time. And so you tolerate a lot more negatives. You tolerate heaps of knee pain. You tolerate back pain. You tolerate stuffing yourself with processed foods that are high calorie for recovery, right? You tolerate these things that are bad for your long-term health because they're necessary in order to win at your sport, or they're necessary in order to kind of bulk up and put on these weights. And so I was like, well, as soon as my perspective shifted to like, do I really want to walk around with back and knee pain for the rest of my life? Is it really worth putting this much weight on the bar? Why do I have to be this strong? And that perspective shifts. It influences all your decisions. All of a sudden, you pick up this candy bar that has 500 calories in it and that you normally smash two of them at night. And you think, but why now? Because my goal isn't to recover from this crazy hard workout, because I didn't do a crazy hard workout. I worked on my mobility. I worked on contractions and joint health and strength and it's some hypertrophy stuff and some aerobic recovery work, and I was kind of managing my health this isn't healthy. So it's an easy decision to not do those things. And those things are just not appealing to you anymore because the reason that you're consuming them is completely different. So having that perspective shift is really good. Sorry, before we move on to the question, we actually didn't address the thing which was CrossFit for the gen yep. pop. I would just say, yeah, in general, CrossFit is not good for the gen pop just because traditional CrossFit programming, which is just like, all right, guys, today is Fran. It's like fucking thrusters and kipping pull-ups. And it's not good because most people are not ready to do it because one, they haven't learned the skills properly. And second is the intensity is just way too high with these movements for most gen pop. They're just not ready to do those things. It's not to say they can't do some variation of it, which would be effective, like maybe goblet squats and like ring rows. That's an appropriate scale for someone. But yeah, like the RX version is to do that kind of traditional training year round. That person has to be young. They have to be resilient. They have to be an athlete.
Yeah, and for how we do it at the gym, how I'd describe it is, you know, if you came to our gyms, you could go to a CrossFit gym and do all the workouts there.
Yeah.
Because we do all that sort of training, we do it frequently, and we prepare you really well for it, and it's varied and good for you. But what we don't do in the gym is just traditional CrossFit training.
Yeah.
Which is like the testing workouts on a pretty much daily basis.
Because that is the sport.
Yeah.
It's like going out and playing a game of rugby. What we do is the practice. Like,
yep.
We do the drills. Like we pass the ball. We do 50 passes on the right, 50 passes on the left. We do ladder drills, you know.
We do it as a fitness routine.
Yeah. We do like ankle training. We do like shoulder rehab
Hit
work.
Hit the bags.
Yeah. We prepare everyone, general physical preparedness and the skills, improve their body composition, improve their health. So if they want to go and tackle a sport like CrossFit, if they want to go and tackle, basketball or whatever, or run a marathon, or they have the tools to do it.
Yeah. And we love that sort of training.
Love it.
Okay. Next question. We've got a few different ones here that have come through the Instagram. One was how to train hypertrophy style in a CrossFit style manner. No sets and reps, please.
Who wrote that one?
Give me a shout. Lucas Fisher. L.Lucas.Fisher.
Lucas asked a few questions. You don't want to do bodybuilding with sets and reps, but you want to do it in a CrossFit style manner. it's kind of a stupid question. You can train hypertrophy. Like if I just told you 21:15:9 with, 30 seconds rest, like it's the same shit. You're doing sets and reps. Everything is sets and reps. I don't care how you look at it. If you have to do a set of 30 back squats and you break it up 6 times because you can't do 30 straight, you just did 5 sets of 6. Like everything is sets and reps. There is no just how you put it on paper or how you word it to yourself or what you name it after doesn't make it any different. The body just needs the stimulus, right? And so if you're married to a name and it has to be called Murph and it has to be like written this certain way and it can't be, 3 sets of 10, you're robbing yourself for some weird dogmatic approach to the optimal training. What you're trying to achieve is the optimal training. And if the optimal training in this scenario is 3 sets of 10, do you really want to trade that for doing like 21:15:9 with some weird rep scheme, which you kind of is sets and reps, but it's just more CrossFit style, how it's written, but it's not as optimal? Like, what do you want? You know, that's kind of a strange question. So maybe just think about what you really want. What's more important?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. It can be done. A lot of people get jacked. Okay. Compound_4, how to push harder in training. Obviously, there's a lot of ways to do this, but one way I'll
smelling
say...
salts.
Which I think makes a big difference, hitting yourself in the face. no, I think whenever you're coaching someone on this, it's the huge one is progressively overloading your training. So, if you just like get super pumped up for one day, it's not sustainable. But if you're like, hey, I'm doing like this thing on the minute, and you start at an achievable point, you build confidence, and you like push yourself to be like, what did I do last week? I'm going to do then plus a bit more. Then you knock that off and you're like, I'm going to do that again plus a bit more. That is one of the easiest ways to start pushing yourself harder and harder in the gym. Because you just hold yourself accountable to what you did in the past and trying to slowly improve on that. And like the hardest workouts I've had in training, it's been that process. It's been the process of doing something similar for like the 8th time and being like, all right, I know I can do a little better. Because you have the self-belief that you know that like, hey, if I've done this in 7 minutes, I can do it in 6:58. And then like when it really gets hard, it's that self-belief that like gets you to keep pushing through. Training partners and other stuff is really a good way to do it. But when the doubt creeps in, like, I can't keep up this pace, you're probably going to drop off the pace because you're like, maybe you can't keep it up.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't keep up with your friend. It's actually, like, very possible that you can't.
Yeah.
50% chance you can't keep up with your friend. But when you start tracking your training and pushing yourself to do more than what you did last week, it's amazing how quickly training gets very, very challenging. But you get better and better at pushing through it.
Yeah. No, those are all good points. And if I think you said to me one day, it's the truest statement that's ever come out of your mouth besides your name is... If there's one thing, if there's two things I'm good at, it's squatting and hurting. Mm. And fucking hell, you are good at those two things. But yeah, to offer my perspective on pushing harder is I think the wrong approach that we're always being sold with exercise, again, is that harder is always better. Harder is only better if applied in the right way. So take all the principles that Raph just outlined and then apply it when it's necessary. And when is it not necessary? Generally, it's not necessary every day. Mm. Every day, it's not necessary to push that hard. To really kind of go into that red zone once every 2 weeks, once a week. You know that you tap into it too often. You're not a professional athlete, and I doubt you're a professional athlete. Yeah, it's going to really, really impact your recovery. It's most likely going to lead to an injury.
For most people, they struggle. Their lack of progress comes more from lack of consistency than like lack of pushing hard in training. So,
for sure.
That's the foundation.
Yeah.
Okay, same person, compound_4. When muscles fatigue before cardio system, when training cardio, how can I do this and get better at breathing?
So, it's a hard question to answer because we don't know what form of cardio that you're doing. But if your muscles are tapping out before your aerobic system, it means you're quite aerobically trained. Mm. So that I would suggest not doing as much aerobic training, and you may need to do some of the muscular endurance training, which I mentioned at the start, which is the tempo concentric work on the potential muscles that are tired. So one of the protocols we used to use, this is in Joel Jameson's 8 weeks out. I think it's called lactic repeats or something, or
what? Well, tell me which one you
muscular
can do.
It's the it's like the 30, it's like 20 on 40 off, then it's 30 on 30 off, then it's 40 on 20 off, and it's like 6 up 6 down, 6 up 6 down. Yeah, so the tempo, I think you, to make it easier, so say you're doing, say your legs fatigue really badly and running, for example, you want to get 3 seconds on the way up, 3 seconds on the way down, and you do that for 20 seconds and then you rest for 40 and you do like maybe 3 sets of that.
3 to 4 sets. Yeah, we did this for all sorts of movements. It's like aerobic something, but I would do like front squats, 8 reps, 2 down, 2 on the way up. So it takes 32 seconds. I'd rest 40 seconds and I'd have like 3-4 sets of that. And it's it is brutal. Like so brutal. Like it's one so brutal. Set, you're like, okay, it's not too bad. You do 2 and you're like, I'm going straight home.
Yeah.
And like after the, like between the 3rd and the 4th, that 40 seconds feels like 1 second.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. And we've done it for everything. Done it for pistols. Done it for ring rows.
Indoor
done
it for pull-ups.
Pull-ups. Yeah. Obviously, like something like pull-ups can get tough if it's like because you can't change the weight. And it's really, really hard.
Assisted, you can do it.
Yeah, assisted pull-ups works pretty well. But that stuff is unbelievable at increasing your muscle endurance in an area. Yeah. It's really, really hard. Particularly something like front squats where the breathing gets so challenging.
The hardest version of it I ever did was double kettlebell front squat at 32 kilos in the front rack position. You couldn't rest it up on your shoulders, how people do. Like, it had to be handles touching, like fingers interlocked, forearms on your body. So, like, weight definitely in front of you. And yeah, it was same thing. I think it was 3 up, 3 down.
So, yeah, cool. Really simple way you could work that out is, yeah, just you'd start with 8 reps and then you go 9 reps, 10 reps, 11 reps, done. Start a new cycle.
Until you just...
Keeping that...
Until you quit gym.
Yeah.
Full time.
Starting with 4 sets and you have 40 seconds rest between each run.
Yeah.
Last question. Have you heard Aubrey Marcus Week in the Dark experience? Is it something you would like to try? I have never heard of it.
Yeah. So, if anyone knows anything about Aubrey Marcus, he's the founder of Onnit. Which is a nutrition company, which Joe Rogan also owns. And it's been very, very successful business, especially in sort of the MMA community. And Aubrey, the founder, he's quite a interesting character. He's very extreme. He like does all kinds of psychedelic drugs, talks very openly about them on his podcasts and his platforms and all his experiences there for like a few years. He was in an open relationship. When that ended, open relationship, if you don't know, is basically like you're with one person, but you both have multiple sexual partners. Hmm. But anyway, so obviously you can understand why that didn't work out. And right now he's on, I think he's doing 6 month celibacy where he's not masturbating for 6 months. Like no, I think it's like no ejaculations for 6 months.
Yep.
Like no sex or anything, because he basically identified that what he seems to have identified of the root of a lot of his problems is sex. Like he's like a sex addict or whatever. He's a very extreme guy, put it that way. Mm. So what part of his new thing is rather than go and do a psychedelic retreat, which he's probably still do heaps of, but his new thing is to sit in darkness for 7 days. It's not complete darkness, obviously you go blind, but it's like a area, I think kind of a maybe like a hut out in the jungle or whatever, and it's pretty enclosed, so there's like fragments of light or whatever, but it's like complete darkness.
And
it's
he eats and drinks.
So. Yeah. Just yeah. And but the idea is you basically just force meditation while you eat, sleep, and drink. So there's enough light, obviously, so you can tell it's like, okay, it's morning time and it's daytime, but he's basically sitting in darkness and to deal with his so-called demons or whatever. And, you know, I was reading about it and I just thought, you know what, this is a very Aubrey Marcus thing to do. He's a very extreme dude. He likes to really push the limits, like just his own personal limits. I imagine he's probably come out. Yeah, he's definitely finished it now because that was a few weeks ago. I was reading the post. But, I mean, my opinion on it is just like, he's just an interesting guy, I think, to follow his journey because he does do these extreme things. So, it's just kind of interesting to hear him talk about it. Would I do it myself? I would never say never to these things. But, like, I don't think I'm ready for it now. But it would be a lot to go through for sure.
Yeah. 6 days in absolute darkness and silence.
He's got a podcast on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's come to talk about
it. He's come out the other side. Yeah, I don't think I'll be doing it anytime soon.
Is that it for listener questions?
All done.
Yeah, nice. All right, so we do have some content to review this week. It's actually not a Netflix thing, so it's actually something really cool. We're going to get to it in a sec. But before we do, you know, I mentioned the struggle I've had with nutritional consistency. The staple that never fails, honestly, it never fails, is the Activate Nutrients. It's so important because so many of the micronutrients that we need every day just don't get from my diet. It's just a fact. I try and eat really healthy. And, you know, I eat healthier than 95% of people. And even still, I struggle to get in a lot of the micronutrients that I need just because it's so inconvenient to try and source all the different, you know, products that you need to get essential micronutrients. And then stuff conflicts with other stuff and, you know, synthetic vitamins don't absorb well as whole food vitamins. And so it was just easier to really get Activate Nutrients. And I think, you know, people ask us now, what are the staple supplements that you use? Honestly, caffeine and Activate Nutrients. It just covers so many things. And so if you guys are interested in it, you can go to activatednutrients.com. You can buy some products. It's on Amazon as well.
Offer MMP, you get 20% off. It is my staple. I actually missed like the first day in so long when we were together on Sunday morning.
Oh, no.
Because we were away. But I had it in the evening.
Yeah. So activatednutrients.com. As always, the link is in the description of this episode. You guys should absolutely pick it up. Sweet.
Okay, we have a review this week. It is not on Netflix, but the one I watched, it is good enough to be on Netflix. You've probably seen this on like your Instagram feed, the ads.
Or YouTube ads.
Yep.
Facebook ads.
But it is called Masterclass. And it's like all these different, basically, courses you get taught by like someone incredibly famous. Usually like one of the best in the world at that topic.
Yeah.
And it's a series of videos which teaches it to you. So there's like Neil deGrasse Tyson does scientific thinking. Gordon Ramsay teaches you cooking. There's like, they got the astronaut on there.
Yeah, Anna Wintour teaches creativity and leadership.
Yeah, it's
Timberland teaches producing and beat making. That was a good one. I watched that one. That was sick, that one. Yeah.
And they have a basketball one.
Steph Curry teaches basketball.
Yeah, they've literally got everything. And I don't know how many you've watched, but you and I together watch Chris Voss, who is a FBI
hostage negotiator.
Yeah, so like pretty much like any of the craziest, biggest hostage situations in the world, he'll jump on the phone and try and settle it.
Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. Masterclass has really pulled off something special here. Like, I watched some of it and I just think 2020 is such an incredible year to live in. Like, the fact that we can go to the best in the world, they're going to sit down with you for hours and teach you their best shit. That's absurd. Imagine going to someone 50 years ago and being like, hey, the best basketball player in the world, dude, you can just like go at home on a thing in your pocket and you can just watch him teach you everything he knows. Everything. The best of the best. Like, what do you mean? No. Like, the best of the best. Visual techniques, like how he dribbles, how he moves, how he steps, like his shooting technique, what he thinks of when he shoots. It's like, oh yeah, like the best writer in the world who's written, like Malcolm Gladwell is on here. It's like, oh yeah, here's their entire written creative process on how they write a novel. For 17 hours and you're an aspiring writer. Like, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. And it's also like it's a high end production. Like they've obviously super got money end. And time and like producers and everything. It's not like this one person's pulled it out with an iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's worth like $500-600 million.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. The Chris Voss one on the art of negotiation was so good. It was like almost because they're going through hostage. Like he shows you live recordings.
Yeah.
Of a hostage negotiation. It's basically as entertaining as a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
So I was loving it.
It's funny because, you know, I think with some of these particular topics, you know, this person teaches writing, this person teaches astrophysics, this person teaches basketball. If they're kind of like a, you know, there are some really good guys on YouTube that teach basketball and they're like, but they're kind of like a college coach and you haven't really heard of the college and like the information is good, but some part of you is almost like, yeah, but do you really know what you're talking about? Is that really the case? Is that an absolute? But with these people, you don't have to question it. It's like, oh, no, this is Steph Curry. It's like the best player, the best three-point shooter in the NBA. Like, I'm going to take his word for it, you know? This Chris Voss, like, FBI hostage negotiator. Yeah, some dude, CEO, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, teaches high-level negotiation. Yeah, but I don't really know this guy. It's like, this guy gets journalists out of beheadings. Like, this is the guy, you know? It's sick. It's sick. It's just getting... You just get the best of the best. That's why I love it so much.
And I didn't actually realize, but when you buy it, you get access to all of them. That's how it works.
Yeah. All right. We'll finish up. We got the review of the week. It was very hard to choose the best review, but it is going to go to Bold Guy Will. So, Bold Guy Will. Bold as in B-A-L-D, so he's got no hair. Smart Intelligent Fitness Pod. I listen to a few fitness and fitness adjacent podcasts, and this pod is easily my favorite. That's how you know podcasting is getting big, when people call it pod. They put out incredibly strong, useful content multiple times per week. Some episodes are driven more toward the athlete, CrossFitters, bodybuilders, powerlifters, and then just normal gym goers to find a ton of great information. While they're in the black episodes are more geared towards the gym owner. The information they provide is always smart and thoughtful, and they share their wealth of knowledge without falling into the trap of becoming another pair of bros putting out a podcast, a fault that has driven me away from more than a few fitness pods in the past. Definitely worth your time. Bold Guy Will, thank you for the delightful review. You've won the review of the week. So all you need to do is message us in subject line review of the week to orders@themymuscleproject.com. And we will send you a full digital training journal and any program, any booster program of your choice as well. So we appreciate you guys as always. Everything we talked about, the nutrition coaching, activated nutrients, and of course the Whoop stuff as well. If you want to join the Whoop team, even my daily email, all the links to that are in the description of this episode. And of course, I almost forgot just before I let you guys go, we have just finished up the 8-week test of the beta program. The 2-week test of our upcoming 8-week beta program. So we will be launching 3 8-week training programs. We're very excited for them. It's a lot of work's gone into them. We've got multiple coaches at our gyms, the best coaches that we've had for years. We trust them. These dudes are super smart. They know way more than us about programming. They're putting their minds together to kind of build out what we think is the best initial programs for people to start on. Hang out for those. There'll be some cool stuff coming out on them soon. We're very excited for them. We think they're going to get incredible results. Obviously, this is experience from Raf and my end, of all the high-level people that we've interviewed over the years, adopting their principles, our coaches' experience working with hundreds and hundreds of clients through our gyms of the Gen Pop, so all kinds of levels. We think we've created something really awesome. And then the beta program got a really good review. Those of you that did it, we're still surveying some of you at the moment, but you really enjoyed the software that we used. It was really easy to use. We're going to be filming some really good content around it. So it kind of explains movements and it will give you some coaching. But we really think we're going to kind of shake up the industry. I know the level of kind of online programming out there is kind of hit and miss. So we promise you guys that we're going to deliver like an excellent product here. It's going to be really enjoyable.
We're pumped.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.